Yes, Cymru Radio.
It's Tuesday, the 9th of March, 2021. This is Radio Yes Cymru. It's time for independence.
Yes, Cymru Radio. Radio Free Wales.
Yes, it's me, Sean Jobbins, and my guest today is Professor Mark Barry, former CEO of biotech company, now at Cardiff University, and a great advocate and promoter of the Welsh Metro, and has also been strategic advisor to the Welsh Government. Mark, there's so much in your CV, I don't know where to start, so just start off and tell the audience who you are.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a jack of all trades, some might say, and a master of none.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, I grew up in Cardiff, I grew up in Grangetown, went to St. Patrick's, went to Mostyn out in Ely. I left Cardiff when I was 18, went to university in Manchester in 1981. So I was in Manchester when the Hacienda kicked off and all of that kind of dance music craze was going on. I spent 6 years there. And then I moved to London in the mid-80s. I was in London until 2000, worked in software, IT, management consultancy, met my wife in London. My kids were born in London. I had a fantastic time. And in 2000, actually 3 years after the referendum, I wanted to come back and do something in Wales. Crazy idea. Everyone told me I was, but we did come back. I dragged my family back to Cardiff. After a short unsuccessful spell with the WGA, which is a story for over a beer, I then started a biotechnology company with some colleagues, which was a crazy thing to do. Raised money in London, went through some funding rounds, had a real blast. I learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes. Eventually, I fell out with my investors and was kind of turfed out in 2009. I wouldn't change it. The experience of starting a business is kind of unique, and I'd recommend anyone to try it. But at 2009-10, I was looking around at what to do. And one of the things I was always passionate about was the economy and connectivity. And having worked in London and worked in places like Milan and in the US, you can see how poor Wales is, or Cardiff or Southeast Wales's transport system was compared to other places, especially then Manchester, which was developing its tram link and its metro link. So I remember writing this blog about infrastructure investment for John Osmond at the IWA. And I started writing and I didn't stop. And I ended up with 15,000 words and a kind of a call to arms on a metro for Southeast Wales. And I then met the Cardiff Business Partnership and people like David Stevens via my brother, who's was and is the business editor of the Western Mail. And I created this kind of call for a major investment in transport connectivity in Southeast Wales. That took off, media coverage, met all the local authorities, the chief execs, and the metro became something that actually was taken up by the Labour Party. And the first politician I think I met one-to-one who was writing the Labour Party manifesto for 2011 was Mark Drakeford, who I met because he was in charge of the, I think, the manifesto development. So, you know, hats off to Mark because he saw the opportunity and included it in the 2011 Senedd manifesto for the Labour Party. And then since then, I've been working either with or in Welsh Government, around local authorities, with rail operators. And the last, you know, year and a half, I've been acting as a strategic advisor to Transport for Wales, them having gone through an enormously complicated procurement with the support of Welsh Government to basically take on what in many other places would be very difficult or impossible. So we're now on the cusp of designing and delivering the next phase of the South Wales Metro. And one of my tasks is trying to bring forward, you know, schemes similar and commensurate with North East Wales and Swansea Bay and other parts of Wales. So it's looking good.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about, especially when it comes to transport and Wales in the same sentence. Look, I want to go back to start off with this. You've become into curious and now a sort of independent supporter, and you know your background, what you explained there, for many people wouldn't be the obvious kind of person to be now saying, look, you know, Wales can become an independent country. Talk us through what happened there. You know, what was it, domestic sort of one day you woke up, or was it a gradual thing, or what happened?
I think it was a gradual. Let me tell you, in 2012, I went back to London for the Olympics, back to my old stomping ground in East London. And I was really kind of proud Britain, and I was, you know, comfortable being British.
Yeah.
You know, even though I didn't like the Union Jack, and I, you know, Wales is not on it, but it wasn't a big deal. I was comfortable with the idea of Britain and our place in Europe and the world. Four things really have really provoked me to think differently. The first is the economy, and the economy of Wales and the economy of Southeast Wales. You know, we've been banging our head against this wall for 70, 80 years. since Professor Marquand wrote his book in the face of the decline of the coal industry in 1936 called South Wales Needs a Plan. So we have to do something different. And clearly what we're doing with the powers that Welsh Government currently have are not really changing the dial. The second thing, the most important thing, and I think the thing that's really tipped me most, is the climate emergency. You know, I wrote about, you know, the need for decarbonising transport 10 years ago, but I think we're in a situation now where the emergency is staring us in the face. And COVID is the huge kick up the backside we as a species need to make some radical changes. And that will reflect about our economy as well. The third thing is my professional experience of working with Whitehall on rail powers, on funding, how decisions are made, and how in reality Wales only ever gets halfway up page two on a list of priorities. I've got a lot of time and respect for Network Rail, Department for Transport, but Wales is too small. We don't have the powers, we don't have the control, we haven't had the funding, and as a result of that, we've had a more and more depreciated rail network over the last 30 years. That's got me almost angry in some cases, because that needs to change. And the fourth thing is getting back to politics. Again, I was comfortable with the Danny Boyle kind of Union Jack fest at the Olympics. You know, and some people don't want to hear this, because I've got a lot of friends in the Conservative Party, and I've kind of supported some of the kind of economic policies in the past. We have a UKIP takeover, a British National Party at Westminster. And the sooner people realise that, that party is trying to recreate, in my view, a Ladybird book version of 1850 Britain. That gumbo superpower, you know, imperial power. Mm. But that's all gone. It's othering. It's putting up walls. It's exclusive. And I think it's very small-minded and rather sad that that's what Britain has turned into. Now, not everyone would agree with that, but that's not the kind of Britain I was kind of hoping for in my old age, and certainly not one I grew up with.
No, and I think the experience, especially the last one is you said about, you know, going back, it's almost a before East of Eden Britain even, you know, as if the East of Eden and, you know, the 1956 debacle hasn't happened.
Yes.
And people are almost going back before then. And we're hearing lots of people come into Yes Cymru for loads of different reasons, but that is quite a big one. People who were quite happy and comfortable in their skin about the kind of Britain they thought they knew, and then it's turned out to be something different. And then, as I say, this whole reliving, if you like, Westminster Britishness, which is the way we're basically not strong enough, not big enough of a threat, and also not even quite enough powers to do stuff. So the way I look at it, we've tried sort of direct rule, if you want to use that rather emotive term, you know, when Wales had no devolution, hasn't worked. We've tried, you know, devolution, and that's not really worked, I think I can say. The one thing we haven't tried is independence, and we want independence to make interdependence work for us. And that's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I think the point, I mean, I also mentioned Brexit, you know, and I know that's quite divisive, and some people will support and not support. I didn't support, I don't support.
Yeah.
You know, I think the existence of the European Union mitigated the kind of politics we now have at Westminster. But when you look at, you know, the state of Wales, the need to think about how we decarbonise and create an economy in balance with nature, and you think, well, where's that coming from? Is that change going to come from Westminster? It needs to eventually, but I think there's much more political alignment with those issues in Cardiff Bay than there are at Westminster. And if you look at the powers the Welsh Government have got, it's quite managerial. It has powers to spend things on health, on education, on roads, but it doesn't have the fundamental levers necessary to influence major economic infrastructure, energy, or rail investments, or to look at fiscal measures.
Yes.
You know, I've written about, we've got a very antiquated tax system. I'm not a tax expert. I wouldn't want to pretend I am. But we still are tinkering with a higher or lower income tax or corporation tax. You know, I think, you know, having just been reading Zonal Economics, which I wasn't even aware existed as a book until about 4 months ago, shows how ignorant I am. But the need to keep our economy in balance with nature does require regulation and fiscal measures to keep us in the safe zone. And I think a government in Cardiff needs to, but doesn't have the powers to really think about tax and regulation that's going to encourage more sustainability, more reuse, a greater respect for finite resources, but also again to encourage and incentivize innovation and small business. So, you know, people think, oh, this is Marxist tax raising. You know, I've been an entrepreneur. I wasn't very successful, and I've got the utmost respect for people who start businesses. I want to support that. I want to support social enterprise. But to provide the safe space, you know, both socially and environmentally to do that, we have to look at the tax and regulatory environment within which we operate. And Welsh Government doesn't have the powers, in my view, to do or put that environment in place. So I'd be arguing for powers to do that.
Yeah, we'd be looking at things more like the land value tax, which sort of shifts, you know, not so much taxing labour and, you know, productivity and yes, enterprise and work, but more taxing non-movable things like land. I mean, there is a special issue thing, obviously, with the agriculture community.
Yeah, you can't tax your way out of a problem. I mean, but we do need the tax differently. And we do need probably a slightly higher tax take for GDP. And I know how flawed GDP is as a measure. Mm. But I'd be thinking, you know, land. You know, some societies survive without any land ownership. And they look upon what we introduced as Western Europeans over the last 500 years as crazy, because no one's making any more new land, right?
No.
I mean, there's the land you got, apart from the Dutch. And I think there has to be a change in our relationship with land to rather be owners, where very, very few people own most of the land and therefore generate most of the value, where there's some responsible custodianship. And I think Thomas Piketty's book, again, which I struggled through a few years ago, where, you know, income is not the big part of the economy now, it's asset value and capital gains. So if we look at a progressive taxation, it has to be around, you know, land, asset, capital gains. I think we should be taxing things that are detrimental to the environment, massively long supply chains, excessive car use, you know, waste, products that can't be reused and repaired. You know, and I was reading, you know, Kate Raworth, the perversity of all those millions and billions of cars that spend 95% of their time doing nothing. That is a huge and irresponsible waste of natural resources. The fact that we encouraged to replace mobile phones every year with a new model, with all those precious metals and natural resources tied up into phones, that within 2 years they're in the back of a drawer in homes all over the world. We should be trying to create a regulatory and tax regime that encourages reuse and longevity, and not just product sales, which I think is unsustainable if you look at the economy we kind of need, not just in Wales, but UK, Europe and around the world. So when you start to reconcile these fundamental changes required to our economy with the weakness of the current devolved settlement, with the climate emergency, as I described, the current failure of UK government to invest in essential economic infrastructure, which is what I think is really important, then you are forced down a road which says, well, how do we change this? Yeah. Well, we need to take more control. And again, I'm not prejudging the outcome. Yeah. It ain't going to be easy. There's no easy answers. You know, Wales does have a fiscal deficit, and you can argue about how much and how you fill that.
Yeah.
But we can't carry on doing what we're doing, because that's the definition of madness, because the same thing will happen, i.e. nothing.
And I mean, we've got the opportunity here to have our own car, which is the, you know, the Senedd. It's not strong enough. It doesn't have enough powers, but we actually can run it and go places we want, rather than hoping and waiting to have the keys to, you know, what some people think is the Rolls Royce of Parliament, such as Westminster. I disagree with that. And not moving at all, at least with the Senedd, our Parliament, we actually get things done and start going down the road we want to go, rather than hoping and praying to get the keys to a car, which we probably won't. And if we do, we'll be told where to go and not where we'd like to go. So, I mean, we have an opportunity here to build something different. As you say, it's not going to be perfect. There's loads of stuff. We have loads of issues. You basically come to the conclusion it's easier if we just do the blinking thing ourselves rather than waiting for change to happen outside Wales.
Well, there's two things. You know, I think the reality is Wales is too small to register at Westminster. Now, I was talking earlier. I think, you know, in the transport world, there's a lot more reception now with the DfT with some of these issues. But again, you know, Wales is a small entry on a long list of things that they're doing from a busy official at Whitehall. Wales is too small to register, and we only get dealt with after all the big stuff gets dealt with, right? Yeah. So you think, well, rather than be just an irritation to a Whitehall official who's very busy, just devolve the powers or provide the powers in full here. Again, without prejudging the end game, I just think being a small player in a huge pot in Westminster, you're just not going to get any influence. And I've come to realise that. The other thing I think I've come to realise as well, you know, there's no utopian solution. And people say, oh, look at Welsh Government, they did this, they didn't get that right. I mean, there's a list as long as your arm of failings of UK governments, you know, and procurement, there's the Shrewsbury and Telford healthcare, health trust issues, there's the IT procurement from 2013, there's the National Audit Office review of MOD spending. Governments muck up all governments, right? Governments are by default imperfect. What you want from a government is one that's 100% focused on your place and trying its best for the people in that place. At the moment, Welsh government does not have the powers to do that. I'd rather they did, and we hold them to account, you know, warts and all, and we can try and make things better and do things differently. And I think the overwhelming reality is as well, I would call myself on most issues naturally left of centre, but on some of these maybe a bit further to the right, some bit further to the left. Given the current demographics, the likely departure of Scotland in the next 2 or 3 years, the voting system, the change in the seats, the opportunity of a centre-left government at Westminster is actually looking rather small. And looking for Westminster for salvation for our problems is probably going to be a very, very long wait. And I'm not sure we can wait anymore. And we have to start doing things differently in Wales and take some responsibility and actually grow up as a country. Just say, now it's time to do this. We're not going to get it right. We're going to fall over. We're going to graze our knee. We're going to get laughed at. We're going to get ridiculed. But damn it, we could be responsible for what we try, for what we do, for what we get right, what we get wrong, and learn from it. What we have now is a kind of a bizarre halfway house that I think ultimately is not working.
Well, you're right there. And obviously with independence, the buck stops then with the government in Cardiff. And it's quite transparent and it's closer to the people, which I think is also something which is worth keeping in mind. And, you know, we can talk about GDP and all this business, but, you know, the Welsh GDP is about the same as Spain or Portugal. But it's much smaller than Ireland, and this is the big thing. And you can discuss about the kind of economy Ireland has and say you don't like that, as I understand that. But the fact that they've been able to do that, and you're thinking if Ireland was still a part of Westminster, they would be in the same situation as us. You can guarantee that because you can actually look at Northern Ireland and you have a cut out and keep version of what happens under Westminster rule. So certainly I think we need to do things differently. You carry on, sorry.
Yeah, we do. I think the question of the economy, and I'm still learning and reading, and you know we have an economic consensus that's been developed since the 1930s, which is beginning to fall apart actually, because it assumes we can use the Earth's natural resources without limit, and that clearly isn't the case. We're now hitting some serious ecological limits on what we're doing, and that changes how we count. And when I was at Westminster a few weeks ago, I said the problem with our economy and transport appraisal is we overvalue that which we can count and undervalue that which we can't count. And actually, that's led to a lot of skewed decisions on transport appraisal and on the economy generally. And I think within the context of needing to change and create a more sustainable economy, you then need a more progressive government to try and re-engineer an economy in that space, and one that will encourage entrepreneurship and business, but also encourage more social engagement and community involvement. And again, I don't see that coming from Westminster. You know, they've still got £20 billion of roads on the pipeline.
And this is the other thing, isn't it, Mark? Because, I mean, and this is where we're coming up to the reality now, where you know the Welsh government has said they don't want the black line, you know, the extension of the M4 around the Gwent level, or through the Gwent level, sorry. But now Westminster Tories is talking of basically overriding that. So we've decided on a transport policy here in Wales. People can argue with the details of it, but that's been overridden or can be by Westminster. So what we decide is actually doesn't have the powers, or we're increasingly losing powers.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of rhetoric around that. I mean, it's a very useful political slogan before a Senate election to say you'll offer an M4. I don't think in reality they can, because if the Conservatives stand on that policy and win a majority in the Senate election, then they can build an M4. The reality is, and I've got another journey on transport planning and roads. I was an advocate for the new M4 until about 2.5 years ago. But when you look into the detail of induced demand and the phenomenon of building more road space generates more traffic and you get more sprawl, then you realise that, well, we've got more than enough road space. What we need is fiscal measures to discourage road use, but also a massive investment in public transport, active travel, and relocating all of the stuff back to town and city centres. I know you're going to ask about the metro and the valleys. You know, the most damage to the valleys communities has been done in the last 40 years, not by maybe 30,000 more commuters to Cardiff, but by the relocation of all of our retail, especially our food retail, to car-based sheds overlooking towns. Mm. They sucked the life out of all of our valley towns and sucked the life out of parts of Cardiff as well. Yep. Grangetown used to be full of shops, all gone. And that's had a massive impact. The car and the choices it's given us for personal convenience has had a massive detrimental effect on our social cohesion because of all of the out-of-town stuff we now have. Retail, jobs, offices, hospitals, all built a drive away from where they need to be. And I think the biggest challenge we have economically is putting all that stuff back where it belongs, at the heart of all of our communities.
There's so much to discuss. Look, I want to discuss quickly HS2, because that's quite a big money-sucking thing.
Yeah.
And then maybe go on into the metro for basically East Glamorgan and Gwent, just so that maybe listeners will be interested in that, especially if they live in the Cardiff, Greater Cardiff area.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then maybe come back to independence. So HS2, now what I understand, Mark, is that, because it wasn't devolved fully to Wales, we're now, it's part of a so-called national spend, which is England and Wales. So we are ostensibly benefiting from this, but we're basically losing billions of pounds. Where had it been devolved, a Barnett consequential would mean £3-4 billion to the Welsh Treasury. Am I right?
Well, it's a bit like that. I mean, as I've learned, the Barnett formula is very complicated.
Yeah.
And it works at departmental level, not a project level. So when there's a change in the Department for Transport budget, they look at what they call the compatibility factor, which is the factor that determines the Barnett amount, and then allocate the change in budget times the compatibility factor to Wales. The issue, of course, is projects like High Speed 2 and rail infrastructure enhancements are deemed England and Wales schemes, and therefore don't have a 0% compatibility factor. So a High Speed 2 being a £108 billion project gets viewed as an England and Wales investment, and therefore there's no compatibility factor with which to allocate some of the budget from the Department of Transport to the Welsh Government. So there is for Scotland and Northern Ireland. So in theory, the envelope now for High Speed 2 is £108 billion, which the Department of Transport holds. Scotland has an attribution factor of about 95%, Northern Ireland about 93%, roughly. Wales's factor has dropped down to about 33%. So you do the math. So, we get a very small percentage of changes in the DfC budget, whereas Scotland and Northern Ireland get huge changes. So we're in effect paying for it. And actually, there are no benefits to Wales, right? Let's be honest about this.
Zero. And, but what gets me, Mark, is that Tory and Welsh Tory and Labour MTs actually voted for that, either ignorant of what was happening or didn't care. And then they're going to complain that their own constituents don't have rubbish transport on the Valleys line. Yeah, we're being robbed.
Yeah, I have a certain... One thing about government is the power doesn't always reside with the MPs or the Assembly members or the Senate members. It's the officials. It's very hard as an MP to understand the totality and detail of a brief that's so broad. And sometimes they just don't know. And that's sad, but it's true. And people need to realise the officials of government, the bureaucrats, have as much influence. And power doesn't reside in one place or one person. There's a kind of a balance between the advisers, the minister, the officials, and then the MPs in the wider kind of executive arm. So, yes, I think we've been basically shortchanged hugely. And that's one of the reasons I've become so angry about this. Because if there was a Barnett consequential for the Department of Transport spending related to High Speed 2, that would probably give Wales another £5 billion over the next 15 years. We could do a huge amount with that, right? We could...
I know, it makes me angry. Because, I mean, I interviewed Jonathan Edwards, Plaid MP for East...
Yeah, I know Jonathan,
back in 2018 about the HS2, and he understood what was happening and was actually gobsmacked that the other MPs didn't. But you say, that's £4 or £5 billion, which could absolutely transform transport in Wales and probably other things as well.
It could, but I think the key thing is, and I think other people have said this, an economy functions forget what kind of economy, but economy functions more efficiently when you invest and upgrade its underlying economic infrastructure. Now, if you run a business and you're making widgets and your competitor across the road is also making widgets, if they invest in a new machine that makes widget at half the cost, twice as fast and twice as many, they can sell more at a lower price than you and you go out of business. And, look at rail. Our network's been depreciated versus the rest of the UK network. Therefore, it's older. It costs more to maintain. You can run less vehicles on it. You carry less passengers and the subsidy's higher. It's a no-brainer. And our underlying economic infrastructure needs to be brought up to the same level. If you want to positively discriminate and you want to level up, you can't just dip your head into the same pot of funding. You have to say, there's a 30-year depreciation that we have to deal with. And I don't think Westminster's going to do that. Right? Mm. It needs to. And the problem is our railway has become much more depreciated than the rest of the UK. And as a result, with the Metro, now we're getting an upgrade for some of it, but the legacy is huge. And what we could do with £3 or £4 billion, that's our share of High Speed 2, we could sort the South Wales mainland out. We could do something in North Wales. We could do more Metro. We could do Swansea Bay. We could even look at things like in the west of the country, some innovation to connect Swansea, Aberystwyth and North Wales. But without that funding, without those powers, we can't. Simple as.
Yeah, I know. It's this. It, does make me angry. I'm going to try and control myself. So quickly, just to discuss about the metro, so we, because a lot of people would be interested in that as well. Before we came on air, I sort of said, look, my concern is basically it's going to suck everything down to Cardiff. I know Merthyr, Tonopandy, Emerald Vale, Tredegar, these places are going to lose out. And we're basically going to be doing the same thing as we've done to England, where everything's directed towards London. Is that a concern? Is that being directed?
No, it's a common accusation. Yep. People say agglomeration doesn't work and it sucks life into Cardiff. I mean, two things, right? There are 750,000 people working in South East Wales, of which 250,000 work in Cardiff. So there's twice as many people work outside Cardiff than in Cardiff, more than that. And in the last 40 years, there's probably been about 40,000 more commuters into Cardiff than there were, say, in 1980. And the reality is, the issue Metro is most going to impact on is mobility choice. Because at the moment now, 80% plus of people travelling in and out of Cardiff, which is the biggest source of commuting, is in car. You know, we've got a climate emergency. We have to get people out of their cars. When you throw in an economy where there's more flexible working, which I completely support, where maybe people spend a day or two in an office, maybe in Cardiff or in a remote work hub in Pontypridd or Merthyr, and a day at home, you can spread the load. But the most important, the most detrimental impact on the economy of the valleys, as I said earlier, was the fact that all of the stuff that used to be on our high streets is being volumed up into sheds and put on the edge of town. You can only get to with a car. So at Merthyr, there's an Asda up at Dowlais. There's Tregore Mills, the most ill-conceived development in the history of humankind, right?
It's an ugly, and the ugliest.
Edifice. Yeah. It's ugly and it's horrible. And people drive there. Cyfartha Retail Park. You then got on the M4, you got kind of Celtic Springs. You got Spetty Park. You got Langstone Business Park. You got MacArthur Glen. We got so much stuff has been taken out of town and city centres. Places like Grangetown and Cardiff have suffered the same way as places like Nelson have suffered. We're trying to regenerate Merthyr. How difficult is that when you've got all this stuff looking down at you from the top of a hill that's covered, surrounded by cars? So it's not the Metro's done that. That's our car choices have done that. And part of what Metro does is provide a means of allowing more people to move more efficiently and quickly using public transport. But we have to then align that with a proper regeneration and development focus on putting stuff back and encouraging development of all kinds. And that means some shiny buildings in Cardiff, so be it. But it also means more things in Pontypridd, more things in the centre of Merthyr, more things in Porth. And that's the challenge, but Metro provides that opportunity. So I don't like this divisive, it's going to suck the life out of the valleys, because most of the life's been sucked out by out-of-town retail and out-of-town offices and out-of-town hospitals. They're the things we have to fix and put back and use Metro as a catalyst. And I'll go back to the first point. The climate emergency means we have to decouple our society from car dependency in a huge way. As I say, 80% plus of people are in their cars. We need to cut that in half at least. You know, cars are the biggest cause of transport carbon emissions. It's the only sector in the last 10 years that really hasn't decreased its emissions. And we're talking about building more roads, which generates more traffic, which generates more cars, which generates more out-of-town development. It's a terribly unvirtuous cycle, which we have to stop. So Metro, for me, is a catalyst to begin to address that. And ultimately, over the next 20 years, we'll need more public transport, you know, in places where are not going to benefit from Metro now. So let's get the Ebber Valley line sorted out. I'm working on stuff in Swansea to try and connect up some of the urban heartland of Swansea and Neath. There's some stuff in North Wales. But again, a lot of this is stymied because we don't have the powers or the funding, apart from the core valley lines now. So, you know, Metro is an opportunity to recraft how we work and how we live, and in a way that will allow us to move and have choices of when we move in a much more sustainable way. The key is, though, we've got to put things back where people can get to without using a car. And it won't be easy, and it won't happen overnight, but I think that is the opportunity Metro presents to us.
Let me ask just a couple of questions on a Metro, then we go maybe to sort of the national question again. Just a couple of things which sort of always on my mind. You're also basically talking about big investment in good buses, so people want to go on the bus. There's a problem then with cycling, which is basically Welsh topography, which is very hilly, and the incessant rain, Mark. You know, who wants to cycle in the rain all the time?
Well, I guess I'm a fair-weathered cyclist.
And the narrow roads.
I know. But I mean, you go to Copenhagen, and they have as much rain there as we do here. They just dress differently. I mean, you get used to it. I'll go back to the 1950s, and look at pictures of Cardiff. People used to cycle and walk and get a bus or get a tram because people didn't have cars. You know, as a society, we did the things we need to do up until about 1958 when we started, you know, ripping up our trolley buses and our trams and our railways. Yes, it's hilly. I'm not saying people should cycle from the top of Pontypridd down to Cardiff, but they can cycle to a local station, or they can walk to a local station, or they can drive to a park and ride.
Yeah.
It's about getting a better balance. And people say I'm anti-car. I'm anti-car when it's not needed. I went through a little kind of Damascus moment about 4 years ago because I used to drive everywhere. I mean, I used to drive the town. I live 2 miles from the centre of Cardiff. And I decided, because I thought, oh, this car is getting old now. I bought it nearly new, nice Saab. I got a quotation from WeBuyAnyCar.com, and they offered me £34 for my old Saab. And I thought, oh, right, and I'm not going to spend 10 grand on a car. So I gave it away to charity. I didn't bother replacing it. So I now, basically, pre-COVID, walked, bused, cycled, public transport, everywhere that I could do. And often, sometimes, refused to go to meetings in places you just couldn't get to. Just to put a marker down. Now, we still have a car in the family because my wife's work at the College Camoys and travels around the valleys. So I do drive sometimes, but I probably drive only 10% of the way I used to. And that was a personal choice. And I think in places like Cardiff and Swansea and Newport and some of our valley communities, which are quite densely populated, many, many more people could choose to make those shorter journeys without a car or without getting on a bus even by walking. People living in rural areas or have mobility issues who need a car, I don't want to penalise them. They still need a car. It's not about stopping everyone use a car. It's about reducing the use of a car where there's a really good alternative for people who should know better, or like I did, and I've gone through that. So I don't want to come across as, you know, evangelical anti-car.
Yeah.
I just simply have to get the mode shift back down to sort of 30% from 80% now. And that means more public transport, including bus, because bus has got a huge role to play. And actually big land use planning changes. And Wales's planning policy is moving in that direction. You know, presumption is we're going to build around transport hubs and around transit routes and building more transit. So I think the policies are in the right place from a Welsh government perspective. It's just that on the rail side, we don't have the powers and we don't have the funding to do some of this stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Just quickly, I'm going to finish on the South Wales Metro here.
Yep.
I mean, talking about people, and this is, you've heard this all before, but I'm just saying it because so people can hear it. You know, this, everything is basically following the valley down to Cardiff, Newport to some extent, maybe Swansea, but a little going across the valleys in there. So there's keeping money within the valley communities, be it Cynon Valley, Tar Valley, Rhondda Valley, Sidhowy. So are that, how are the plans about that? So people going maybe from Merthyr to Tredegar or to Ebervale or Abertillery?
Right, so what can I say? So I'm doing some work with Transport for Wales, so I won't give away too much, but we know what's coming with the next phase of Metro. So the core valley lines, the lines north of Queen Street, to Rumney, Merthyr, Treherbert and Aberdare, are going to be completely transformed in the next 2 to 3 years. You'll have tram trains and tri-modes, double the frequency, 10 minutes off journey times, faster, more reliable vehicles. It'll be a transformation. One of the things I'm really pushing is the idea we create this grid network where we integrate bus services and we put more cross-valley connections, either bus or even rail. And I wrote a blog a few years ago about this cross-valley link between Quakers Yard and Abercynon across to Nelson, Trelewis and Ystradmunnock. So it's easy to get from, say, Bargoed or Blackwood to Pontypridd.
Yeah.
Right? So those things are being looked at. They're not well thought through yet. They're not well developed because the focus for Transport for Wales, you know, is getting the next phase delivered. And it's an enormous undertaking to go from an organisation that didn't exist in 2015 to taking on the biggest procurement in Welsh government history, the most complicated in rail industry history, now designing a metro in the face of COVID, which is going to challenge, you know, demand in the next 2 or 3 years anyway. So there are ideas, there are schemes being looked at, but yeah, we can't get ahead of ourselves. There's a massive job to do for TfW in the next 2 to 3 years to deliver what's already committed, which will be, I think, you know, people are generally quite cynical because nothing's ever happened before at that scale. But I think people will be generally surprised, dare I say gobsmacked, when if you're in Pontypridd and you've got 12 shiny tram trains an hour, shuttling out of Cardiff in 22 minutes and vice versa. So Merthyr is easy to get to, Abercynon is easy to get to, Aberdare is easy to get to. So it gives us more choices. And in doing that, I do hope it sees a regeneration of many of our valley communities. And it's not easy because our economy needs to change because of the climate emergency. But at least it's a canvas we can try and draw better pictures on than the ones we had in the past. And I'm providing a space for some new thinking. And a metro is about being a catalyst for change, not an answer in itself.
And I'm seeing a message by Gaynor, our producer, with 4 exclamation marks, making a point that, you know, you live in Cardiff and it's different in rural West Wales and in the north as well. We won't go into that. But I know, actually, we need to have a whole discussion just about transport, I think. But you carry on.
Well, quickly on, I get that. You can't deliver a metro in rural areas where there's low population, but we need to get good bus services. There's this new idea of called demand responsive transit, where you have dynamic bus routes in response to real-time demand, where you use an app and technology to modify a bus route in real time based upon who wants to use it. And those kind of technologies are being looked at by Transport for Wales and will have a really good utility in areas of low population. And they could feed and connect into more fixed routes and fixed services. So,
well, there is something in Ceredigion called Booker Bus, which is quite similar to that.
Exactly. Yeah. It is. It's a modern incarnation of Booker Bus, which Professor Stuart Cole kindly championed a few years ago.
Yes, and was funded, if I'm correctly, by European money, which is now coming to an end.
Yeah.
So that's another issue. But it is a big thing, and I'm glad Gaynor raised that. And the Booker Bus was popular, and, you know, it does, as you say, is some innovative thinking, going where people want, at times people want, and they have a level of control over it as well.
And the thing about one final thing on transport planning is about reconciling different and sometimes conflicting choices. You can never make everybody happy because you've got a fixed pot of money normally, and you're trying to deliver either service frequency or coverage or reliability or speed. And ultimately, you're trying to balance up all these things to come up with something that helps the most and maybe disadvantages the fewest. There's no perfect answers in this space. There just needs to be proper engagement and conversation to reconcile the best combination of interventions to help the most people. And I'm just about trying to do that. And then using that kind of investment to help stimulate other conversations about the kind of economy we need. And I've gone on a journey since I wrote my first Metro report. I'm far more cognizant of the need for the circular economy. And really, that kind of subtle people-focused regeneration, the bricks and mortar will never do. And it's hard. But we are in a place where we've got to look at the economy more holistically and make sure we count the things that do damage to well-being, as well as the pounds and pence to come out of the back end of a profit and loss account. And in that space, there's an opportunity, I think.
Yeah, and coming back to this national question, you're now thinking, and I think we've had loads of people talking to us about this, that you can see that this is now possible through a Welsh journey, if you like, through the Welsh Parliament, through the Senate, through independence,
yes,
and not faffing about waiting for Westminster, which may never change. And as I say, the added factor that Scotland could very well be leaving us in a few years' time in any case.
Yeah, I mean, just on what, you know, I'm, you know, most of my friends from London are English. It's not, yes, it's not an anti-English thing. It's a kind of recognition that Westminster is probably past its sell-by date as an institution capable of dealing with the world we're actually moving into. It's too focused on where it was, which is that it's got this millstone around its neck. And my hope would be that, you know, there's a kind of growing recognition in England there needs to be greater devolution and local powers. And the fundamental is that Treasury needs to be devolved. The power to issue and raise and borrow money on a more local basis is fundamental to how you can invest in long-term infrastructure. And I would hope that we end up with some sort of, you know, confederation arrangement with Wales and parts of England, whereby we have control and we've decided what powers we want to share on the basis upon which we share them. That is not remarkable. That is not rocket science. That's a perfectly mature, responsible position to hold. I don't know exactly how that will look, and nor does anybody, but at least we deserve to ask the question and say, can we do this better? Can we do this differently? And can we actually improve ourselves and provide an exemplar for other parts of the UK in doing so? And I sincerely hope that England can join that journey and we can recraft these islands, Britain, into something that's far more attuned to the world we're moving into rather than one we've come from. And that, you know, not easy, but that's what I'm at.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, a lot of people now are looking at sort of a Scandinavian type model or a Benelux type model.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because basically independence doesn't tell people who to fall in love with or what their favourite food is or which football team they support. It is basically a question of governance. I know what people do in their own private lives and where they go on holiday and stuff is up to them. It's to do with, yes, who governs us, to do the basic questions about governing. It's not magic. It's in a way, it's quite boring stuff in the end. Who decides policy and transport or health and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And I think that's the way a lot of people are starting to think. And this is the kind of conversation we are happening. Mark, it's been great speaking to you. I think we'd have to carry on program sometime in the future because there's so much to say.
There is.
And there's so much to discuss.
Yeah.
There's some great blogs up there. When we put this online, we'll give a link to one of the best ones, or one, well, a couple of them, so you can have a look at what Mark is talking about.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll retweet. But keep an eye. It's at, what's your Twitter account again?
It's South Wales Metro Prof blog, I think. I'll better send you a link. It's S Wales Metro Prof.
That's it. We'll retweet that as well. So keep a look, and Mark, lots of interesting stuff. We haven't even really discussed that what you've written about, you know, the economics of independence, or how Wales could finance itself, and the things you could do. So I think we'll have to cover you back in the end.
Okay.
Mark Barry, Professor Mark Barry, very grateful you made the time to speak to Radio Yes Cymru this evening. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. Such important things to discuss about the Metro, which does affect everyone, I think, in Wales. So many big issues about the kind of ways we want to build, and I think we are building, I think we are on the right way. And also so interesting to hear about your journey from where you now support independence, where you would have been a few years ago. Very interesting to hear. Stick with us on Radio Yes Cymru. We've got loads of good conversations coming up over the next few months. It's good to have your company. But for the time being, Professor Mark Barry, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you very much.
Yes Cymru Radio. Yes. Independent news and views for an independent nation. Yes.